Welcome to Basic Brewing Radio for Thursday, October 4th, 2012. I'm James Spencer. Here at Basic Brewing Radio, we're all about home brewing. This week, we continue our series on the budding craft beer scene in Northwest Arkansas with a conversation with Ben Mills, former home brewer, now owner of Fossil Cove Brewing Company in Fayetteville. If you're new to home brewing and would like to get into the hobby for the first time, check out our website, basicbrewing.com, where you can find archives of our audio and video podcasts and our DVDs to walk you through basic and more advanced brewing techniques. You can follow me on Twitter. I'm Basic Brewing, all one word. You can find me on Facebook at facebook.com/basicbrewing.james, and our show page on Facebook is at facebook.com/basicbrewing. Thanks again to everybody clicking on the Amazon.com associate link on our basicbrewing.com site. Whenever you think of Amazon, don't go to Amazon first. Go to our website first and click on the Amazon banner on the right-hand side of the page. That will take you to Amazon, and then whatever you buy there will get a percentage up. So, pretty cool. It doesn't cost you any extra, and you'll be helping us to bring you the show. Perfect solution, in my opinion. We appreciate your support greatly. We also have associate links for Brew Your Own Magazine and the American Homebrewers Association on our site, too. You can find our Basic Brewing iPhone and Android podcast apps on their respective stores. If you can't find the Android app, go to Amazon.com and search for Basic Brewing app there. You should be able to find it there. We're on the BlackBerry podcast directory, too, and we're on the Stitcher app as well. Monday is the deadline to submit your data for the Brew Your Own Basic Brewing Radio Collaborative Experiment on Chilling Methods. You can find the form to submit your data at basicbrewing.com/experiment. Also on that page, you can find a link to a PDF that I wrote up detailing my brewing process for the experiment to kind of give you a guideline to the information that we'd like to see. I documented my recipe, my brewing technique, temperatures of the worts as they chilled or didn't, and an estimate of the amount of water that I used for both immersion chilling and no chill. What you won't see is a sensory data of the two beers that I brewed. No tasting or smelling or visual of the finished products. I want to save that for the show that we're planning to record in conjunction with the Australian National Homebrew Conference later this month. I also sent samples of my beers up to Brad Sturgeon at Monmouth College for some analytics. Brad has some new equipment that he's wanting to try out, so I'm looking forward to hearing what he finds out about the, especially the IBU levels. And many thanks to Brad for helping us out again. One note from the mailbag that I found very interesting this week. Adri in the Netherlands was listening to the show with Chris Colby on brewing with nuts and seeds. Adri says, yesterday I listened to your show a couple of weeks ago on brewing with nuts and seeds. One of the subjects was how to get rid of the oils. But why waste something valuable when you can put it to good use? Adri says, last year I brewed a walnut brown ale. First, I borrowed an oil mill and pressed the oil out of the nuts. The remaining stuff was nicely pulverized and dry, and I used it without further steps directly in the mash. This way, I had a batch of nut ale and a liter of delicious walnut oil, which is very tasty in salads. The walnuts didn't stand out very much in the beer, though. Next time, I will take your advice and roast or toast them first. Very cool. Both the walnut oil and a walnut beer sound very tasty. Thanks for the note, Adri. Remember, next week, Andy and I are going to the Great American Beer Festival, so there will be no show posted. However, you can follow our adventures through our Facebook show page, facebook.com/basicbrewing. I hope to be posting pics as we explore beer mecca around Denver. I'm really excited that Michael Tonsmeyer, the mad fermentationist, is going to be out there. We've known Mike for several years now, and I've never met him in person. I'm also excited that we'll be meeting some of you in person out there, too, both on the floor of the Great American Beer Festival and at various breweries that we'll be visiting. For the first time, we're arranging an informal meetup in advance. It looks like Wednesday evening, we'll be going to Prost in Denver to chat and sip some beers with whoever's interested. As I say, nothing formal there. Check out our Facebook.com/Basic Brewing page for final details, but that's where it stands now. So if you're interested in chatting in person, I know there are some people on Facebook that have expressed some interest. So, you know, whether it's just a handful of us or, you know, more, that'd be just fine. Now back to the business at hand. Ben Mills is a young brewer and right now a one-man band. He's got some part-time help in his tasting room, but his brewery, Fossil Cove, as it's getting off the ground, he's doing pretty much everything himself to make the operations work. And he took time out to talk about what it was like for him to make the step from being a home brewer to pro brewer. Well, Ben Mills, welcome to Basic Brewing Radio.
Thanks for having me.
We're here at your establishment, Fossil Cove. Mm-hmm. First of all, where'd the name come from?
Fossil Cove, my parents live on Beaver Lake, and there's a cove next to their house where I'd go find fossils. I actually have some sitting over here on the bar that we found down there. So,
cool. What kind of fossils?
The cool ones are, they're called horn corals. And then also you can find a bunch of crinoid pieces and things like that too. So all marine fossils.
So if you weren't a brewer, would you be a paleontologist?
I don't know about paleontologist. Probably maybe a botanist is what I would have done if Arkansas Tech would have had a botany degree. Hmm.
So what led you down this path? I mean, how did you get here?
Started home brewing in college, just for fun. Had some buddies that wanted me to try it because I tried making wine and it didn't turn out too well. So they were, you know, told me to make something we would all drink. And so I started making some extract kits there in our dorm, or not dorm, our on-campus apartment. And then after that, tried to use my biology degree, went and did an internship in the Everglades, and wasn't a big fan. So I came back and reweighed my options and looked into brewing as a career. So got accepted to UC Davis Brewmaster School in 2010 and went January 2011. And then worked at Silverton Brewery in Silverton, Colorado in the winter and summer of 2010. I worked at Silverton Brewery just to get some experience, make sure it was something I wanted to do.
Now, that's way up there. I think Sean Terrell worked up there as a brewer for a while. He's been on the show a few times. But that's way up in kind of the boonies, isn't it?
Yeah, it's north of Durango, northeast of Durango on Highway 50, about 60 miles. It's about 9,300 feet up. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, small, itty-bitty little town. It's like 200 or 300 regular residents and just a little 7-barrel brewery there, little brew pub.
Now, with a lot of careers, sometimes you learn more interning or in your first job than you did during the school curriculum. Is that what you found there?
I think it was, two separate things. At Silverton, I learned a lot of hands-on, like, just mechanics of a brewery. You know, hooking hoses up, doing tri-clover clamps, CIPs, all the hands-on things that you just learn through time. And then at school, we didn't really do any hands-on stuff. It was more of the theoretical book knowledge for the tests that we take at the end. And a few guys, most of the guys went and did internships at larger breweries, like Deschutes and Stone. Dogfish Head took a few. And so those guys got some of their hands-on experience in that time, and I decided not to. I just stayed in Davis and studied. Just because I'd already spent 8 months at a brewery, I didn't want to take away from somebody else's chance. Mm. So,
and the small brewery stuff is more suited to what you're after anyway.
Yeah, and basically what happened was we bought this equipment the middle of the summer while I was at Silverton Brewery. And so I knew that, I just found it was a really good deal. It was a complete system, basically. And I don't know. It just kind of, that's where the whole let's open a brewery thing came from. So just kind of on a whim, and we did it, and I knew I was going to be going to school, so it sat in storage for a couple of years. And then the time took me to finish school and then come back and get the building ready. Hmm. It was about 2 years it sat in storage. It's almost 2 years to the day before we opened.
So talk about your equipment or your setup.
We have a Ripley Brew House. They're Ripley Stainless out of British Columbia, Canada. I think it's British Columbia. Anyways, it's a four-barrel brew house, a mash tun brew kettle. And then our fermenters are from a company called Hecker out of Mexico. I don't know that they're still around anymore or not. They're rated at 3.5, but we brew 4 barrels and they can handle it. So 4-barrel complete system. Got a plate heat exchanger, plate and frame filter, in the cooler, a few small serving tanks for carbonation in the cooler, and then keg everything off.
It's a nice setup. I mean, it really, it looks neat, and because it was, I guess, designed to go together. It wasn't, you know, you go into some breweries and it's kind of pieced together. I found this here and this there, and yours all kind of looks alike. Yeah, it goes
nice.
Together.
Yeah, it was nice. Basically, what happened was the brewery in Port Townsend, Washington, which is just across the bay from Seattle, went defunct. They got foreclosed on a bunch of random events that led to it, I guess. But so they shut down, and this broker bought it, went in and removed all the equipment and sold it as one big lot. And so I flew up there and took a look at it and decided it was worth a shot. So I'm kind of glad I did, because now it's used equipment's almost impossible to find. It's hard to get a hold of it. So we actually have some new tanks on the way, some new 10 barrel fermenters on the way, so we're gonna triple our capacity here in the next month or two.
So you're already stepping up.
Yeah we want to get into some bottling, start doing some bomber bottling. The pumpkin ale that I just brewed yesterday or Saturday should hopefully be the first beer we bottle.
So that a lot of people, one of the reasons I'm doing this series, one is to kind of promote the local guys, selfishly. But then the other reason is I get, you know, questions every now and then from people. I want to start brewing. How do I get into it? I mean, what are the steps I need to go through? How do you find financing and all that stuff? So, I'm hoping that you'll share with us your experience to kind of help people over their hurdles before they get to them. Did you arrange investors, or how did you do that?
Basically, it's my parents, me and my parents. They were more of the financial side of it, and I was more of the sweat equity side of it. So the building itself was pretty kind of a mess. There was a bunch of offices and just hodgepodge in here. And so I basically came in with a 5-pound sledgehammer and a cordless screwdriver and a pony keg turned upside down and took it apart. And then I had a buddy would come down and help me do some different work. So as far as most of the work goes, that's what I contributed myself. And then the know-how in the brewery, like how to get it set up and operating properly and hooking everything up, was kind of where I came into. So I guess it is more of kind of like my thing, and I realize that, and they realize that, but they still thought it was a good idea. Fayetteville needed it, so.
Yeah. And a lot of people have kind of had the same idea at about the same time. I mean, was it kind of a surprise that there was this wave of new breweries at the same time?
Yes, as many as there were. I expected one or two, maybe, along with me, especially. Just because it was so stagnant for so long, I couldn't believe that somebody hadn't tried to do it before. And it was just kind of funny and I don't know if it was because people started hearing about everybody else and everybody just kind of rushed it a little bit. That may be part of it, but yeah, there's 5 of us in the past year.
Yeah.
So.
And as far as your business plan is concerned, is that good or bad to have everybody come online at the same time?
Well, you have to look at the different types of breweries that are opening. So you have Hog House is a brew pub, West Mountain's a brew pub, Tanglewood is a brew pub. And so they aren't really direct competition for me, because I'm focusing more on the production side of things. And then Saddleback, his only plan is kegs for right now. And so he's not getting into the bottling thing. So that's one of the reasons. One of the other reasons I want to get more into bottling is to hit that market as well. And then Core, he's going to do some canning and everything. And he's not quite. He doesn't have his big system up and running yet. And so everybody's just kind of on pace to do their own thing right now. And it's not really like we're stepping on each other's toes. And I'll have guest taps down here. So I've had a Core beer, and I've had a Saddleback beer, and I'm going to have his pale ale on this next week, probably.
There's the old saying that I've said before in this series, is that there's the old saying of the reason that you have
like districts where there are a lot of department stores or something, you know, because where more shirts are sold, more shirts are sold, you know. In other words, people are attracted to a certain area because there's a certain grouping or a mass of the type of businesses.
Yeah.
So that's, I mean, that's got to be good for Northwest Arkansas and help everybody, I'm assuming.
I think so too. And I think if, you know, if Benton County goes wet and they allow breweries up there, that's going to be a whole nother ballgame. And it's just going to be, you know, people are going to want to move up there because it's another open, wide open market. And I have people from Benton County coming down here saying, well, when are you going to get your beer up there? We want good beer up there. So a brewery in Benton County would be, that'd probably be the next step as far as the brewing scene goes. But yeah, this, I mean, just this area is ripe for it. Just the culture of Fayetteville. It's got the right culture. You've got plenty of people that are interested in craft beer. Our tap room here just sees just a very eclectic mix. Mm. I can have 21-year-olds and all the way up, you know, and they're all in here together and sitting down and hanging out. It's kind of nice to have that different, just wide open demographic.
So. Yeah. Yeah, the Fayetteville likes to look at itself as kind of the Austin, probably, of Arkansas, and so you've had, when I was here before, you had food, a barbecue stand set up front, so it's almost like a brew pub atmosphere in kind of a more portable way. Is that a regular occurrence?
yeah, the food trucks are, it was kind of an idea I had from a few of the breweries out in Colorado. Ska mainly was one of them in Durango, and they had a food truck that was kind of a permanent attachment, not an attachment, but out in the courtyard of their tasting room, tap room area, they have this food truck out there, and that's where you go get food. And so the brewery itself doesn't really put up with it and doesn't have to mess with it.
Yeah.
And it's, I didn't want to mess with food. I wanted to focus on production. And food is just a whole nother investment and a whole nother headache. And you got more staffing. And if it's another variable that could or could, you know, that could hurt your business or make your business. And so it just wasn't worth the hassle. And so the food trucks, local food trucks, is kind of a big movement here in Fayetteville. Mm. People just opening up different kind of places in a mobile food vending thing. And that was kind of my solution to it. Mm-hmm. So I borrowed that from Scott, and I was just like, well, let's get some food trucks down here. So we started on trivia night is our main food truck night. And that's, we have a trivia game here at the tap room, and we've got people that come in, and now they expect to have a food truck here. So they plan their whole evening around coming down here and playing trivia and getting some food and a few beers.
What night is that?
Trivia is Wednesdays at 7. And we've got several different food trucks that are coming now. The Grillinium Falcon from Hammond Trees. Primal Need is a food truck out of Siloam. And she does wood-fired pizzas. Mm. I've got a new one coming. It's called Turk on Wheels, and it's Turkish sandwiches.
Oh, wow.
It's very, very good. He was here Saturday, and it worked out well. So, and I'm kind of known as one of the big supporters for food trucks. So I had the food truck guy that kind of coordinates everyone stop by the other day. And so he had some interesting ideas on more things we could do.
So that opens up your establishment to more a family atmosphere. Whereas if you didn't have food, it's just a bar.
Basically, it's more of just a place to come get a few beers. I've always told people they can bring their kids down here, and we've got games and different. Mm-hmm. I've got Cokes and everything too. So you know, I've got a few guys that bring their kids in on. You know, to have a beer and fill up a growler and go or something like that. But also with the food, yeah, it does open it up more for, you know, if the whole family wants to come down and hang out, that's more than welcome to, yeah.
What did you, how were the legislative or the regulation hurdles getting into business?
So I'm sure most everybody's heard of the horrors of the TTB, the federal application that you have to fill out. Ours wasn't really bad. I would say ours was almost record time. We turned it in. We were expecting 3 or 4 months, which is what they tell you. And we turned ours in the beginning of February and got the notice the middle of March. So about 6 weeks.
Wow.
Took us about 6 weeks. And that's, I mean, the lady emailed me, and all she wanted was a few extra, like, signatures or something. It was something real simple. I just had to, you know, I just had to say it's okay for you to do that instead of me having to send her new documents.
Huh.
And about a week after she did that, and that was 5 weeks in, she sent me an email that said our brewer's notice had been approved and gave us our brewer's number and everything. And I was just like, so does that mean that I can start brewing beer? I sent her that email. I said, so is that what that means? And she said, well, yeah, as soon as you get your state approval, you're more than welcome to go. And I was just like, that's like two months ahead of time. I'm not even ready yet. So,
what about on the state level as well?
The state wasn't too bad, really. It was basically just applying for the native brewer's permit. And they're real good, but that native brewer's permit is awesome. It really encompasses all the cool things about having a brewery. Brew pubs can have it as well. I think that's what Tanglewood has as a native brewer. I think West Mountain has the same. So it allows you to do all your own brewing. You can brew the higher gravity beers. You can do self-distribution. So I actually deliver all my own kegs and everything. I'm my own salesman, my own wholesaler, basically. It allows retail sales, so I can do the tap room. And whenever we start bottling, I'll be able to sell my bottles out of here as well as sell them to other places. And it does the growlers on Sunday, growlers to go on Sunday. So, and it also, the way I read it and the way I understand it, any bottles we do too, we'll be able to sell to go on Sundays.
Really?
Mm-hmm. So basically it's me and two or three other guys that are doing growlers right now. I guess four are the only places to get beer on Sundays around here.
To go.
Beer to
you,
go, yeah.
You can go to a restaurant or something, but...
No, the beer to go thing is nice. People really dig it.
Did you hire an attorney to help you along the lines, or did you all do it all yourself?
No, I was told, by a few people that we should get an attorney. It would make it easier. And honestly, the federal paperwork wasn't that bad. And one of the things that gave me the idea that we could just do it ourselves and not worry about hiring an attorney was a buddy of mine from Brewmaster School, who's just a little bit younger than I am. Actually, the two youngest guys in our class opened breweries, and we're the only ones that opened breweries. Yeah, Jasper had done it, and he said he did it by himself, just to make sure and stay organized. And he got his back with no trouble, and so that's kind of gave me the confidence to go ahead and do it ourselves as well. And it really wasn't bad. The hardest part would be trying to describe to the feds what you're doing. They ask you a lot of questions about energy usage and wastewater and everything. So. Knowing what was in my wastewater, which is something we talked about in brewing school, it definitely made it a lot easier to fill out the paperwork.
Huh. So what's the biggest challenge in transition from being a home brewer to being a professional brewer?
I would say the equipment, really. It's just there's a lot more, there's a lot more going on. You have just bigger pieces of equipment, a lot more volume, making the connections. You have to, on my system, it's all hoses and triclover clamps, so you have to make all the connections and know where it's going and keeping, a lot of home brewers don't worry about pressure too much until they're going into the keg or the bottle. Pressure is a big thing for me, just forced carbonation in the fermenter, making sure whenever I transfer my beers, I just use CO2 pressure and making sure I don't overpressurize my tank and collapse the jacket. There's a lot of expensive equipment out there, and there's definitely four or five different ways to break it every time I do something. So you just gotta, I would say the safety and keeping track of what you're doing is the hardest part.
Did you have to modify your recipes at all?
Yeah, basically I took, there's a few, like the triple and the IPA were the two that I took from past home brewing recipes. And the rest I just came up with, and I'm still kind of tweaking a little bit. The brown was basically a first recipe, and it's really taken off, which is awesome. The first batch I brewed, people really loved it. So I haven't really changed it very much from the time I brewed it. The same with the black IPA.
Yeah, here I am. I've got five beer sample sitting in front of me. I hadn't touched it for 20 minutes, so
should be nice, and you should be able to get some good aromas off of it.
So, where should I start?
I would go lightest to darkest, which is how I have it arranged. So, the blonde, triple, paleo, brown, black IPA.
Okay, talk about the blonde.
The blonde, basically, I just had a lot of requests for a light beer. And we had a Belgian wit whenever we started as a seasonal, and people really liked it. A lot of ladies like lighter beers, and people who are new to the craft brewing scene like the lighter beers. Mm-hmm. And so I got the wit sold okay, but I didn't think it needed to be a year-round beer. And so I just kind of developed this blonde recipe, just mm-hmm. kind of a shot in the dark, really. I'd never made a blonde before. And I was just like, all right, let's do this and see how it comes out. And so
it's nice. It's got enough hops to make it interesting. You know, it's not gonna scare the newbies away, but there's enough bite in there to keep the interest of an experienced brewer, in my opinion, or an experienced drinker.
Yeah, I do have some people say something about you should drop the hops just a little bit.
don't listen.
I personally think that, you know, a little bit of, I mean, that's what, without it, I think without enough hops, beers are too sweet.
Yeah.
And a lot of people are turned off by that sweetness. And so I think a little bit of bitterness at the end, and it also helps inexperienced craft brewer drinkers understand that, you know, the hops are there, mm-hmm. but they're not offensive. And then it's real light. If I'm going to sit down and have a few beers at one of them, that's one of them I'll do, just because it's real light. It's lower alcohol. It's only 5%. So you're not, you know, it's not necessarily a session beer, but it's not a higher gravity, you know,
right.
have one and done kind of beer either.
Now the triple, I'm assuming that it is a higher gravity beer if it sticks to
Belgian,
the style.
Belgian triple, so it's I shoot for 8.5%. He's a Belgian yeast strain, so it's kind of fruity.
Mm. Any spices in that?
No, that's just the yeast.
That's nice. That's very nice.
Yeah, and it's I'm using the Fermentis, the S33 yeast on that right now.
Really?
Mm-hmm.
With it in the little packets?
No, I can get 500 gram bags.
I was going to say, that's a lot of little packets.
I'd need about, let's see, there's 11 grams in each of those. I'd need about 16 of them every time I pick. No, more than that, 20 of them. So, no, I can get 500 gram boxes.
Hmm. So these seem like fairly standard styles right now, but you've got the pumpkin beer in the fermenter now,
and the black IPA was something a little different. Mm. A lot of people come in and they don't know, they've never heard of a black IPA, and so they ask me, you know, what is a black IPA, and so I get to try to explain to someone what a black IPA is, which is not exactly the easiest thing, because really, I mean, the simplest explanation is it's a black IPA, really.
Yeah, it is what it is.
So trying to tell people, oh, it's got some roastiness from the dark malts and the hops, you know, it's hard to balance the roastiness and the hops so you don't get overbittered and all that. So it's kind of fun. It's one of my educational beers. I can teach people a little something about different styles and different malts, everything.
So black IPA is an up-and-coming style. It's becoming more established, more popular. So what's the key to a good black IPA?
I would say not overusing the darker malts. Because, you know, if you throw in too much roasted barley or black patten or anything, it's going to be roasty, super roasty, and it's got its own bitterness, and it just kind of... Any beer that's got too much roasty malt in it is just kind of too much. So balancing out the darker malts and the hops is, to me, it's the hardest part. And getting a good black color is, I mean, that's kind of hard to get that good black color that you want.
Without over-bittering it.
Yeah, so a trick I use, and it's something we used in Davis, is to cold steep some of your darker malts.
Huh.
And the cold steeping doesn't pull out the astringent, burnt, roasty character from your dark malts. So I actually used 10 pounds of black malt, which for me is, I mean, the most I ever use in the brown or something is a pound or two.
Oh, wow.
And so I actually used 10 pounds, and 5 of it went in the mash, and 5 of it went into a 5-gallon bucket with some cold water.
Huh.
And just kind of steeped, and I strained out the liquid and poured that just directly into the kettle.
So there's a brewing tip right there. I'm going to save it for the last because I don't want to mess up your order. So what do we got here?
That is the paleo ale. So that's our pale ale. A little play on words with the name. It's kind of a moderately hopped, middle of the road pale ale, basically. Mm. It's kind of your next step up above the blonde, is what I tell people.
It's taking the training wheels off a little bit.
Exactly. Exactly, yeah. And it's kind of citrusy. People, that's one of our best sellers right there. Most of my accounts carry the paleo.
So talk about, I mean, you obviously sell the beers here, but talk about where else your beers are found.
Right now we're just doing kegs. Haven't started bottling yet, but plan on getting into the bomber bottling soon. Our keg accounts here in Fayetteville are Buffalo Wild Wings, Mellow Mushroom, I guess I could say. So Buffalo Wild Wings carries the pale. Mellow Mushroom has the brown right now, but they're going to switch. They kind of do a rotating tap. Noodles has the brown. Spadini has the brown. And then Ham and Trees carries the brown. Tanglewood Branch has the pale. Brewskies has the pale. The new restaurant out at the Springdale Airport flaps down. They have the triple right now. I'm waiting on him to give me a call. So I think he wants to switch to the brown too.
So you're busy.
Yes, I am. I am busy, especially if someone calls me. You know, my biggest thing right now is all my accounts are so close. If they call me, I try to get the keg to them that day. And so that's the hardest part right now is finishing what I'm doing during the day and then having the time to run a keg to them before I have to open the tasting room or the tap room. So it's it can be a little challenging sometimes to get back here on time.
You're going to have to be a boss before you know it.
Oh, I know. I'll deal with that one when I have to.
I mean, we were talking before we started recording. I mean, right now, you are the brewer. So everything is set up the way you want it to. Everything is run the way you want it to be. Is there a hurdle that you're going to have to get over as far as letting go of, you know, some of that? I mean, these are your toys right now, and to have someone else come in and play with your toys, it's got to be kind of intimidating.
It is, just because you lose some control. You lose some control, and you have to have the faith to trust whoever is in here. And so basically it'll be one of those things where I'm sure I'll probably almost drive someone away trying to be kind of a mother hen, just like, hey, don't do it this way. Keep in mind what's going on over here while you're doing this. And just getting someone up to the level of respect for the system that I have, I guess, that's going to be the hardest part. Mm-hmm. And, you know, letting go and trusting someone just to be here by themselves for the day. Yep. And not, you know, not blow a door off a ferment or do something like that. That'll be a hard part for sure.
So I'm assuming that this is the IPA?
Belgian Brown.
Oh, Belgian Brown, okay.
Belgian Brown, yeah. The Belgian Brown, it's just a real mellow Belgian brown ale. It's not really a style, but basically brew a brown ale and throw some Belgian yeast. It's also the S33, the same as the triple.
Oh.
Throw some Belgian yeast in it and some coriander.
Oh. It's a little... A cousin to Fat Tire, sort of?
Kind of, yeah. It's just, it's my malty beer, basically. Mm-hmm. It's my malty beer. I prefer hoppy beers, but that one is just really taken off. People really like it.
Yeah.
It's like Ham and Trees goes through it, and they'll go through a keg a week, easy. Sometimes more.
Yeah, I'm gonna pick up a growler to take home. And that may be the one that I go with,
nice.
So that won't make my wife mad. I'm training her, still training her to get, you know, on the hop bandwagon, but, you know.
And I have a lot of people that are scared of darker, which it's not really the darkest beer, but kind of scared of darker beers, and I tell them just to try the brown and give it a chance because it's not what you would expect. It's a lot more smooth and easy drinking than you would expect from a brown or a darker beer, yeah.
Well, my wife likes dark beers, so she likes the porters and the stouts.
Oh, okay.
So no problem there. I finally made it down to the black IPA, and it's really nice. Talk about it again while I take another sip.
Okay. So the black IPA, what I was going for is it's a kind of a new style, Cascadian Dark Ale, they also call it.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of my favorite styles just because it kind of encompasses more of everything. You get some darker malt in there, so you've got some different flavor from the malt, and then you've got the the hoppiness. You can play around with the different hops aromas and the bitterness and everything, and it just kind of encompasses a lot of what I like in a beer, a darker beer and also a hoppy beer. And so for me, it's it's just a good, you know, cooler weather beer than not necessarily winter beer, but like a fall style that that, and it, you know, it's also a new kind of a new style for this area. A lot of people don't know what it is, and so it's, I really like it. I really like brewing it, and so I figured I could teach, you know, do a little educational with it as well.
Yeah. Well, that's nice. If I were to take the growler home just for me, it'd be it'd be that one. but all the beers are nice and clean, and the Belgian ones, you can really the yeast characteristics come through. What do you do as far as temperature control?
All of our fermenters are glycol jacketed, and so I have temperature control modules that monitor the temperature of the beer, and solenoid valves that open and close automatically depending on if it's, you know, if it's too cold or too warm, those solenoids will open the glycol and drop the beer temperature down. So I, luckily, that's one nice thing about spending a lot of money on a real system is you can, you know, you have more control is key. And so the more control you have, the better the beer comes out.
So on the Belgians, do you treat the temperature regimen different?
Yeah, so the Belgians, I did a lot of research on this dry yeast because I've never really brewed with it before. Mm-hmm. And right now I'm just getting my lab kind of set up, and so I needed to have more control over the yeast without being able to do cell counts and things. And so that's kind of why we're using the dry yeast right now. I'm going to play around with different yeasts now that I've got my lab stuff. As soon as I get my hemocytometer and everything, I'll start doing some trials with different yeasts that I'll be able to prop up and kind of, you know, kind of tweak the fermentation profile of each beer. But for right now, I did a bunch of research on the dry yeast, and a lot of other brewers have gone that way. And they said, a lot of them said that a slow, gradual rise throughout fermentation is good for that S33. And so I'll pitch it around 68 and then let it rise to 72 and hold it there while it finishes.
So not a tremendous temperature range.
No. But it is just enough to let the yeast kind of start spitting out the esters that you're looking for. So they do, you know, I've fermented it cooler and held it at, you know, 68, and it just kind of, they don't do quite as much with the esters and everything. So especially with that triple, that's what you're going for, is a nice fruity, estery beer. So
right, and spicy.
Yep.
Without having to add spices. Mm-hmm. So have you got your bottling line picked out, or what?
Bottling line is basically going to be a counter pressure filler, and the guy sitting next to me with a tabletop capper.
Ah, there you go.
Simple. That's why we're only doing the bombers to start out with. And it's going to be limited, probably be a couple kegs from every batch, so about 150 bombers from every batch, and that's just, you know, that's just to supply a little bit of demand for bottles, sell some out of here, and maybe the lower gravity beers will sell to Ozark Natural Foods. I've talked to them, and they're pretty excited about getting them. They can only, they're beer only, though, so they can only have 6.3% and below. So, like, the pumpkin ale, probably all of my seasonals, they won't be able to carry unless they get a liquor permit, which I don't think grocery stores are allowed to do. So, but, and then I've also got an in with a couple of the liquor stores, just see if I can't supply them and just keep, make sure that they know that they're going to run out before I have more coming.
Well, if nothing else, it'll generate a little bit of buzz about the brand and about the brewery.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I'm, you know, right now, everything we do is word of mouth. We don't really do any marketing or anything, partly because I can only make so much. And so to go out there and guerrilla market myself is not a good idea, because I don't have a bunch of people wanting beer that I don't have. We've actually had to turn down several keg accounts until we get these bigger fermenters up and running, just because it's 75% of my tank space right now is for the pale and the brown. And I just don't have, I don't have enough tank space to keep up with a bunch of accounts and try to spit out, you know, some other beers that for the tap room that people enjoy, like the triples are most popular for growlers.
Let me go that way too.
Yeah, that is the most, by far the most popular in growler sales, just because, you know, it's good. It's, you can take it anywhere, and just about everybody that's there is going to like it.
Mm-hmm. So talk about the pumpkin beer.
Ooh, the pumpkin ale. So we did a test batch. a week ago. I did just a 5-gallon pilot batch just to let people try it and make sure that I had the profile where a lot of people were going to like it instead of just a few. I'm real excited about the pumpkin beer. I brew it every year, and it's just one of the first fun beers I ever brewed, and it just kind of came out really good, and I like the process too. It's a lot of work to roast a pumpkin. We actually grilled it, and Friday night I sat here for 5 or 6 hours and grilled 15 pumpkins, so the process is fun, and it's just a different kind of beer that, I like it. I like making beers where people take that first sip and they're like, that's different. It's really good.
And so do you put the pumpkin in the mash? Or?
Yep. So I'll just basically, I don't puree it or do anything like that. I've kind of found that if you leave it intact a little bit, just kind of scoop it off the rind and just don't really, maybe squish it up a little bit, but don't really do much else to process it. And just pour it in after you mash and just kind of set it on top. Your sparging and everything will, it'll extract most of the flavor and everything that way. Because if whenever you do it, if you try some afterwards, after you've mashed it, it really is almost gross how bland it is. There's just not much left in it. And so leaving it kind of stringy and intact really, I've found, doesn't affect what you extract out of it.
And if you put it on top of the mash, you don't have to worry about it sticking your sparge.
Yes, exactly. Yeah, so that was another idea. I was just like, well, it's still going to get hot, and you're still going to extract things from it. And so after several stuck batches, I started playing around with different things, and that's why I don't like using the canned pumpkin, because it is literally going to it's like cement in the bottom of a mash tun. It's just the worst. It's cheaper and easier to do, but at the same time, you don't get some of the same flavor profile that I'm getting by roasting it myself. You get some extra roastiness that is, it really tastes like roasted pumpkin. It just is pretty good.
And spices? Do you use spices?
Spice, yeah. So a lot of people try to do their own spice blend, and I feel like when you do that, you come out heavy on one. And it's just, there's always, most of the commercial beers I've had this year are all really heavy on one spice. And cinnamon's normally the one that it's too much of. I think I had a Shipyard that tasted a lot like a Red Hot. And it's just too much of one spice. And so what I did, I just went up to Ozark Natural Foods and got their pumpkin pie spice blend. And that was what I did in the pilot batch. And it was fine. There was not one spice that came out and hit you. It really was just that pumpkin pie spiciness. And so I just stuck with that for the big batch too.
And did you put that in the boil, or?
Yep, the whirlpool. So since those spices have so many aromatics that are easily driven off, the whirlpool, after it was done boiling, just at the end of the whirlpool even, just as late as I could while it was still hot, and then just transferred it right. It's almost directly after I put the pumpkin pie spice in, I started transferring.
I look forward to that. You'll have to let me know when that's done, and so I can get some before it's all gone.
Oh, yeah. Well, I brewed it Saturday, so hopefully a couple weeks.
Oh, wow.
About the 14th of October, I think.
Very cool. Are there any tips that we haven't talked about that you found that were completely unexpected or that surprised you?
I would say, and I read this before we started and everything too, but it's just, there's always hidden costs that you're not thinking of, always. And it's not the big expenditures that you're planning on that kill you. It's the $500 here, $1,000 there. We got to have this. Oh, the city requires that. You just, there's always going to be something, And on the equipment side, you don't really know how it's going to run until you fire it up and try to brew a batch. And it's that first batch is going to, don't plan on it coming out. It's going to, there's going to be something go wrong, I promise. I've heard that from every brewer. The first batch you brew is probably going down the drain.
You're kicking the tires. You're just running it. It's a test drive. You're just running it down the road.
Yep. So, our first batch went down the drain. It was just a mess, really.
Well, continued success, and I'm so happy that you and the rest of the guys are are getting started up. I mean, this. Do you feel like you're at the beginning of something big here?
I do. I think that. I mean, I knew. I planned our, I based everything off of Fayetteville really being starved for good beer. Mm-hmm. And so, yeah, I do. I wish everybody good luck. That's why I try to support everyone and help out when I can and put some beers on tap down here to promote them. And I think the area is just, it's just ripe for it. And the more people find out about it, the better we're going to do. And it's just, I mean, so far, just 4 months in, we're already ahead of schedule as far as expansion goes. So, but I mean, as of right now, everything's working out the way better than I expected. So just keep up that momentum and just keep riding the wave. It'll be, should be a good time.
Awesome. Well, thanks for the beers and thanks for the time.
Always, anytime.
Thanks again to Ben. Ben let me taste some of the fermenting pumpkin beer. And it was, of course, still very sweet and yeasty, but man, it was good. The roasted pumpkin really came through, and the spices seemed really well balanced. So I'm looking forward to tasting the final product. And next time I play with pumpkin, I'm going to try his trick of just putting the pumpkin on top of the mash and sparging through it. Remember, we're taking the week off from posting an episode next week so that Andy and I can get you good stuff from the Great American Beer Festival. I hope to see you out there. Check our Facebook page to see where we are and what we're doing. And, man, it's going to be fun. If you have brewing questions, show suggestions, or just want to say howdy, write to james@basicbrewing.com or just fill out the contact form on basicbrewing.com. And please don't forget to tell us where you're from. Be sure to check out our DVDs, Extract Brewing and Partial Mashing, Stepping into All Grain, Low-Tech Lagering and Decoction Mashing, and Introduction to Wine Kits. You can find them all on our site. And we've got combo deals on our site to save you a few bucks if you want to buy more than one DVD at a time. And you can check out our Basic Brewing shirts in the store as well. You can see a listing of the fine folks across the country who sell our DVDs on basicbrewing.com. And if there isn't a vendor in your area, you can order them online in our online shop at basicbrewingshop.com. Thanks to everybody who's continued to click on our Amazon.com link. We appreciate the support there. Our featured products this week that were purchased through the link are Dinosaurs on a Spaceship and How Big Can You Get? The Music of Cab Calloway. Hey, Dinosaurs on a Spaceship. That was a Doctor Who episode, I think. Thanks again, everybody. And remember, I can't tell who bought what, so no worries. Just click on the Amazon.com logo on our site the next time you feel like Amazon shopping. We greatly appreciate your support. Don't forget, you can also join the American Homebrewers Association and subscribe to Brew Your Own magazine through the associate links as well on basicbrewing.com. That's all until next time. Until then, thanks for listening, everybody. I'm James Spencer. Production help for Basic Brewing Radio and our website is provided by Kelly Dotson. Basic Brewing Radio is a production of Active Voicing. We'll talk to you next time, everybody. So long.